I've been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off. And when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
Hey, bro. I've been there.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life, and we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
Welcome back to the Hashtag Mole Edge Podcast. We are back with our normal co-host, Becky Lohman. Becky, welcome back.
Thanks. I'm happy to be back. I took a little break, I think, didn't I?
Yeah, I mean, in the offset, I don't think it's right to call you Becky Third Red. And finally passed. I think because it's
can I
interim.
Come up with my next name?
I think you probably should, yeah.
I feel like I
you'd do better than me.
Yeah.
And we are joined on the podcast this week by veteran Associated Press reporter and veteran observer and participant of Missouri Media, Scott Chardon. Welcome to the podcast, sir.
Thank you, Scott. I'm so glad to be here with you guys.
And thank you for the cigar.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a relaxing thing. You know, the thing is about a good cigar, even a bad cigar, but a good cigar, you can't smoke it in a hurry, and you have to do it in repose usually. So I think it's a relaxing thing to converse with, along with a frosty beverage on a warm day. And we are outside where it's a warm day.
That's right. We have to.
We like our guests to be relaxed, so that's good. Mm-hmm. We, for the record, Mom, I'm not smoking a cigar.
No, she's not. She declined.
I declined.
For the record, Mom, I'm not enjoying a Captain and Diet with a lime. We are outside. You can probably hear the bustle. We're right here on High Street. Outside Grand Cafe. Becky was nice enough to arrange Grand Cafe. And whoever had 1 minute and 20 seconds when we'd hear the first siren in the pool, they won. Or to hear our first siren going down the street. Scott, I wanted to have you on as an idea I had. The debate has been going on really since Trump ran, but it's hyped up to a fever pitch about Trump and the media. But at first, I have to borrow your lighter.
Yeah, and I'm glad to share it. So the question, Trump and the media, gosh, we could do the whole show on that. And if you have a specific question, please ask it. But Trump and the media, you're talking oil and water. I, as one who worked in the media, and I see what the media has done historically in our country and has been a watchdog, I am offended at the idea that the media is the enemy of the people. And as we recently saw with Hurricane Harvey, everybody, what did they do? They turned to the media for information, which is what the media provides better than anybody.
And it reminds me of the relationship we have with police, right? There are groups that get angry with the police, and then all of a sudden when you need them, you hope they're there. And it's the same thing with the media, I think.
Well, the media is there doing its job. And I think the media has to hold public officials to account, especially public officials who have a shaky grasp on the facts, which has too often, sadly, been the case with President Trump. Now, some of the media are, this is a change, I think, are more overtly, I mean, it's ideological blend in with the news product. I'm an old AP guy, and AP never had an editorial page. We went and told the story straight. It was based on the facts. You got all sides of the story as best you could, and it's in pursuit of the truth. So Trump and the media, well, pursuit of truth versus Trump, they're doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing, in my opinion.
I will re-pick up my role. I play on Camo X often as the Trump supporter. I take a little pride in probably joining David Steelman as the first people to very loudly in the state predict Trump's victory. I will start off by saying I think Trump has done some pretty irresponsible things where the media is concerned. A lot of things he's done has not been productive, and not even that they're wrong or bad strategy. I think they've been counterproductive to getting his own message across. However, I think there's I think if you look back at 2008, that was the worst media bias I'd ever seen. Personally, and it was not necessary. It wasn't really against John McCain. It was against Hillary Clinton. The media has probably never cheered for anybody as hard as they did for Barack Obama. I don't think there was a lot of objectivity. And then I think the media, I think that there is a different, more shrill approach the media takes to Donald Trump than any candidate I ever remember. Is it because he doesn't tell the truth? Probably helps. But I think that, honestly...
that's pretty big, Scott.
In the gut of a... Now, again, Becky is a very well-cultured Colombian, Colombian-Missourian. And Scott Charn's a highly educated former member of the media. I'm just a simple old white trash hillbilly from West Butler County. I do not believe that Scott Pelley or Brian Williams or Anderson Cooper, I think they have a real hatred for Donald Trump, and I think it comes through the screen.
Well, Scott Pelley's gone. Brian Williams, the liar, is relegated to the midnight hour on the East Coast, 11 o'clock our time. But right now, you've got other cable channels, and if you want to talk about cable news, MSNBC is getting the best ratings right now. They are calling Trump out and holding him to account. Fox News is seen as sycophantic to Donald Trump. But forget all that. Forget what they're putting out. Who's watching them? What concerns me is the president sits in the morning watching Fox News, taking his cues from them, and he's tweeting. And look, I've never been in the Oval Office. I don't know what he's got to do. I know that probably the coolest thing about being president is you can get whatever you want for breakfast, you know?
I'm down for that.
But what is he doing, wasting time tweeting about none such subjects? I mean, that's what's dismaying
to
me.
And if you pull up his Twitter, you know, half of them are attacks on the media. It's not even like he's, you know, tweeting about tax reforms or things like that. It's a tweet about tax reform.
People
and then
love
it's
the
a
media,
tweet
90%
about
of their
how the media is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even substantive issues that are facing our time. It's hits on the media all the time, nonstop.
Look, here's where, and I know you were a Trump supporter, but I have to believe that, and you said this, Scott, that you're dismayed, I guess, by some of the things he said. I really was annoyed with Trump, or worse than annoyed, when he attacked the Gold Star family. I didn't like that. I didn't like it when he attacked John McCain, who spent 5 years in the Hanoi Hilton.
Completely agree.
But my hope was, once he's our president, is that he'll grow out of it, or he'll become presidential, like flipping a switch. Well,
that is not
it. But I think that was a pretty common hope. A lot of folks I knew that were very supportive of President Trump said the same thing. This is a campaign, and once he's in office, we think it might change.
So, all that said, and, you know, with the basic theme that we can all agree that if Trump breaks it, we buy it on national security or whatever it might be, I worry that the president needs to be someone, like a lot of the crises we've been dealing with that are Trump-related are created by Trump. I mean, they're in his White House.
Like what crisis affects a regular person have we been dealing with?
The Russia investigation has been a total distraction to Trump, and he caused it by firing Comey. He brought it on. And so we have a distracted president.
I don't think he should have took Chuck Schumer's advice either and fired Comey, but he did take the Democrats' advice and acceded to their demands to fire Comey. I honestly don't believe that. Look, I was an early Trump supporter. I didn't vote for him because of any Boris and Natasha or Vladimir or Gorbachev or anybody. I voted for him because I thought he was the best choice of the two. I don't know many other folks in West Butler County that take their marching orders from the Kremlin. And I think it's a little insulting to the overwhelming majority of Missourians that voted for Donald Trump when people put off that they were duped by some Russian or some squirrel or moose or whatever.
Well, I am also... As an old guy, I grew up suspicious of Russia in all things. And so maybe I have that sort of West Butler County identical skepticism or dislike of Russia. But as more string, it's like pulling string out of the ground. You know, you're going to get something or pulling that line out of the pond.
What if they don't find anything?
Well,
many in the left won't, and I say the left, I mean the media won't accept it, will they? I don't think they'll accept if he finds nothing.
And that's the question. When is enough? What is going to be sufficient evidence to say, let's close this book? I don't think there ever will be, because you can speculate all day. Everybody can. That's what media is good at, right?
It's still information. I don't know. You don't know. You don't know what Robert Mueller's up to. We hear dribs and drabs about he raids Paul Manafort's home before dawn, the day after Manafort testifies and all that.
Well, we hear a lot of the leaks.
Yeah. But the leaks, too, have come from Trump people. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the other thing, by the way, that's there have always been leaks.
Sure.
As an old reporter, I love leaks.
Yeah.
I love them.
We're gonna stop the podcast right now and do a toast to all the leakers out there.
I don't know.
Well, Scott and I are gonna take a second round.
Okay.
We're gonna toast our cigars and our drinks to the leakers out there. Here's one for you.
Here's to you, yeah. The unsung heroes of journalism. The
yes,
leakers.
I honestly cannot have any affront with leakers.
I'm sure many of them are listening now, so cheers to you, leakers.
Yes.
But the leakers, very often, what gets me is you read a story in the New York Times. Now, some of your listeners will say, well, that's fake news on its face. It's the New York Times. I don't believe that and never have. But when they talk about, we interviewed 12 White House aides and 6 people who talk to Trump or whatever, regular confidants, you have to take notice of something like that.
Been a lot of off the record.
Yes, a lot.
Let me ask you this.
And Trump used to employ that too.
Let me throw this to you. Mm-hmm. Do you think the New York Times would publish as many off the record stories with no one on the record sourcing them if it was Barack Obama as opposed to Donald Trump?
It depends on the story.
Well, take the average story now. You'll have 4 or 5 sources, none of them sourced. I think it's a fair point to raise that I think some of these stories that have no on the record sourcing would not have made the New York Times about President Obama.
Well, first of all, President Obama didn't do anything nearly like Donald Trump has done day in, day out. That
I think everybody agrees with that, Republicans
and
Democrats agree
but
with that.
To your point, Scott, the question ought to be, what is the standard for allowing someone to go off the record?
What do you think the standard is for that?
Well, I grew up in the culture of the Associated Press, and there were very clear written rules about this on unnamed sources. And primarily,
Can you tell our listeners what those are?
Well, it's to be avoided. And it's to be avoided because it detracts from credibility, and you need to explain if you grant anonymity, it needs to be something that cannot be obtained any other way that is factual and not just opinion, like, oh, the president had an ugly tie today, said a source. Well, if you believe that, say it on the record, you know.
Right.
But we're not talking about things as trivial as
that. Today we read a ton of off-the-record stuff. What do you think the standard is for today? That's not the standard applied to the Washington Post for sure today.
Well, I can't speak to theirs because I know what the AP standards are, and they've been renewed in some literature I've seen. Now, I've been gone mm-hmm. from AP for quite a few years, but the idea was that, and what I have seen creep in is a lot more of describing more about the sources and why they want anonymity. That's something that, because I think in my entire career, I covered 12 sessions of the Missouri legislature when I was AP correspondent. I think I used a source, and when I say off the record, there are grades within that, okay? Mm-hmm. I think I used them only a couple of times in my whole tenure.
Wow.
Because I was able to get things on the record, either documents with my own reporting or what have you. It just wasn't something I did or felt the need to do. First of all, off the record to me always meant I couldn't use it. I couldn't use it. Not for attribution meant I might be able to use it, but I couldn't attribute it directly to this person by name. And you would agree on how they would be identified. That was the difference to me. Off the record might be something you'd pick up during your research or reporting. Mm-hmm. And it might be someone who, an example might be someone who is deep in the bowels of state government. Some call it the deep state, right?
Sure.
And I don't know about that. But someone who sees or knows something and wants to blow a whistle. They've seen something that doesn't look right to them. They may not be a person with a big title, but they may want to reach out. And when you cover the Capitol a long time, you get to know the custodians, you get to know the staff, you get to know people who work in the Truman Building or the Broadway Building or the Jefferson Building. You get to know people over time, and they would give me great story ideas. They'd say, you know, do you know about this going on at DESE? Well, no, I didn't know about that, but that's worth checking on. And especially they might point out, and they'd say, I don't want to be identified as the source of it because I, you know, serve at the pleasure of whoever, but I don't think this is right. So I'm for that. And if I look into it and find that their point is not well taken, maybe it doesn't grow into a story, but perhaps it does. Now, this is not on the level of national security, the White House, everything else. And
I read a lot of stories, though, that the sources are not named.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, and I mean, it is a wide berth of stories. It looks to me like bigger than I ever remember before.
It seems like they're more frequent. And where is the line? Because yeah. I'm sort of the thinking that, you know, sometimes there's things that I wouldn't want my name on, but at the same time, then I can also kind of push out BS and know that my name's not going to be tied to it. It sort of moves the needle in a way that I want it to be moved without having to own it. So how, as a reporter, do you look at Becky Lohman and say, you want to go off the record? This is when it's okay to do, and this is when I would say you're pushing BS, and I'm not gonna do it.
Well, I rarely would ask a news source to go off the record because my assumption is on the record. In fact, there was a politician in the Capitol who I won't name who got on the elevator one day and just started unloading in very profane terms about a political opponent and kept it up all the way down the hall. And I said, uh-huh. And we got to the end of the hall, and this person said, he made another point. He said, now that's off the record. I said, I'm sure you understand that means everything before this is on the record. So, you know, I felt free to use it. You know, they know you're a reporter. I wasn't a stranger standing there. And you need to be cautious about what you say. And that, you know, leads me...
Well, in the world of social media, I think that concept is gone.
Discretion.
Discretion.
Well, I think some people are more discreet than others, even on social media. Again, maybe that's an indicator. What you said may reflect President Trump on social media and others, because is that something on Twitter that you would say to somebody sitting as we are right across from them? And
we use off-the-record sourcing, and there's ways to do it, but usually it's something that I want to verify.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times in state government, there are ways to verify it through emails, showing you a text message or some documentation. I think the lasting piece of Trump, there's two things. One, you know, the phrase going over the head of the media to the public. Ronald Reagan, that was I was obviously, you know, in elementary school while he was president, but that was a phrase you hear from history that people use. I think Donald Trump may be finding that just because you go over the head of the people doesn't mean they're going to like your message. And I think number two, though, I find that there's maybe a third to a fourth of the American people that will vote for a person of another party. Maybe they normally vote Democrat, but you find they're Republican, they'll cross over. Maybe that's even a little larger than a third, but I would say that's somewhere in the ballpark. I think those people, even if their candidate they voted for lost, they want to see their president do well. They respect the office of the presidency. I think that you really, I'm not sure you can honestly say the media gave Trump any breathing room for those folks to people to catch their breath after a wildly tumultuous election season. I think there's if you remember Barack Obama, some hard negatives set in, no question. Republicans got very, I remember it being that August recess. It was the August recess when the town halls went on, and that you may be hearing off the record news right now, people walking on the sidewalk. So yeah. But I think that you looked at that August recess when the hard negative on Obama kicked in. I think now you have it to where I don't think the media can say they gave Trump a second for the public to catch their breath. I think that means when he does very questionable things like fire the FBI director, the public is less trusting than they would have been otherwise.
Well, I would respond in this way. It may be that Trump didn't give them a second because Trump has rarely let up on his twit storms and his comments, and they aren't supposed to take a vacation just because the president's supposed to get a honeymoon. And Trump has given them fodder. The other thing is, so many unanswered questions have been out there that reporters have continued investigating, even after Trump got elected, of course. And the notion of a honeymoon is kind of a quaint notion now, don't you think? It doesn't happen it's hard to think of it happening in this 140 character world. So if Trump didn't get a breather, I think Trump is responsible for that in part. Not that they wouldn't have been aggressive in covering him anyway.
I think it makes the media less credible when they attack him, when he does things that are obviously very questionable.
Think about the president's credibility at this point.
Trump didn't invent conservative skepticism of the media being liberal.
Well, that's true.
He just exasperated it.
The Gallup poll this week indicated that among people under age 30, Trump's approval is down around 20%. And approval goes to credibility.
Election?
Well,
probably.
Well, no, this
that
covered
low.
This covered, as I understand it, people of a lot of political stripes. In other words, it's an aggregated number. Unless I'm misstating it, I'm not intentionally doing that. But it tells me these are voters of the future. There must be such dismay and disillusionment across the
board.
So
that was under 30 or 40?
It was. 30. He was hitting under 30, voters under 30, 30, hitting 20. But
they don't vote though.
Well. Hold on. What about these Bernie Sanders people who have gotten so active who were not before? And I'll say also maybe there were Trump people, you jokingly say deplorables, who maybe were disillusioned, but they turned out and voted. Okay? In other words, he didn't just get almost 19 points ahead of Hillary in the final numbers because people didn't vote. And so
we white trash people made sure Trump got more votes for president than anybody else in the history of Missouri.
Well, you succeeded in that regard then, Scott. But think about that, though. Where are these folks going to turn? Does it all cycle back? You know, the historian Arthur Schlesinger wrote a book called The Cycles of American History. He thought everything ran on he was old school. He thought everything ran on a 25 to 30 year cycle, ups and downs and whiplash back and forth. But we're at a point in Missouri, you know, this is a very pivotal time right now. And they say that all the time, but we are coming up on reapportionment. We're coming up on redistricting. We're coming up on some critical decisions that are going to have to be made about infrastructure, basic kind of life things that are going to affect public policy for 10 or 20 years in the future. And where do these folks turn if they're disillusioned? And I'm not only speaking about Democrats. I'm talking about young Republicans and others. Where do they go? Who's the next leader? And I don't know the answer to that. I know that if Mike Pence became president, maybe there would be a constituency around Mike Pence, okay? But again, he's a white-haired guy, you know, and an older guy. Are they looking for younger leadership? Where does that leadership come from?
Well, I tell you where our leadership and support for this podcast comes from. It comes from the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. I always want to thank them for sponsoring our podcast. We could not do this without them. And I have to say, Becky's the one that was had the foresight to have this out here on the street, and I think this is working out great. And Becky, I order a meat. We're here at Grand Cafe. I call that the meat and cheese tray. What do they actually call that at Grand Cafe that we've ordered here?
So they call it a charcuterie board.
Like Sharknado?
No, not like that. But the same ch sound that you're talking
about
is that works. We'll work through all the menu.
Change it to the charton plate.
The charton. It's damn near as good as Vienna sausage.
We can work through the menu once the podcast is over and do the vowel sounds.
You throw a few Vienna sausages on there and get rid of them vegetables, and that's a hell of a deal.
There are a lot of
vegetables. The Grand is very accommodating. I'm sure that if you ask for something, they try to find it in the kitchen to bring it out.
I got some in the truck. I always keep a couple cans on me.
They'll have something, Scott. You can put some stuff in their freezer.
So, bringing this back around about the president, I think he does have a constituency, and I think that constituency is, I noticed when he said stuff about John McCain, I don't know how you can say that's good. You know, I
don't think anyone defends it. I think they just say that doesn't really matter as far as the larger issue that they voted for, reason they voted for Trump, right? Like, they think he's imperfect, and they say that's part of who he is, and that's why I like him, it's because he's off the cuff. They use that as a positive.
Some of the stuff that there, you keep in mind, when you work in the media, you deal with a lot of folks that are paid to be offended all day long and outraged and upset. And I was offended, I think, one time back in 1985, and I was, by God, offended. The only terrorist attack on Missouri soil, the Dinkinger attack. But I don't go through my day offended. I offend 25 times as many people as offend me. And I like the fact that Trump's like, you know, get over it, Snowflake. You know, did I think Barack Obama did a good job as president? No, I did not. Do I think he disgraced the office? No. Do I think he did his best? Yes. Do I think he was a good president? Yes, I think he did a fine job.
Interrupt you because you can dish it out and you can also take it. But I think the problem that some people would see with our president is that it's not consistent that way. Like, he wants to attack you, and then if you attack him, he gets very sensitive. So with you, I agree. You offend and you're not offended, right? But I think that for him, it seems like he can dish it out and he can't take it.
It seems to me the president has not toughened his hide. And if you think of Barack Obama in that way, some of the things that were hurled at Barack Obama, the birther silliness, all of that was thrown at him.
Don't you think he used that birther silliness to show the silliness of his opponents?
Well, I think it did show the silliness of opponents, whether he meant to or not. But
if it was a strategy, it was a good one in my
opinion. But I mean, in that regard, you know, imagine somebody sitting there questioning your American citizenship and your birth, and you're the president of the United States, duly elected, with a certificate of live birth.
But he didn't show.
That would offend someone. But
I thought it was strategic.
He seemed unflappable about it.
Yeah.
Well, if he's that smart and strategic, then why can't this guy be that smart and strategic?
But I think Donald Trump used the media against themselves in some terrific ways. I mean, if you're a student of politics, I thought he did a very good job of taking the media and disqualifying them from the race. And I think they also played right into his hand.
I think Trump does throw out tweets and things that people's hair starts on fire about.
Some people's
and
hair.
It's a shiny penny, and it is a distraction because it is unpresidential. Sometimes it's not just unpresidential, it's rude.
Just because the New York Times is offended does not mean anybody in New Madrid County is offended. And well, I think that's just the fact of what Trump
I give people in Portageville credit for having a sense of decency and fair play that would, indeed, they would be offended by certain things. I think they would be.
But now, it ain't nearly the same that people in Manhattan are offended by.
But they also elect, you know, those folks elected a president that is the common man. So sometimes he's offensive. And I think largely people don't care. And so when you see the media keep picking at these little things that he said,
I think
said,
it works for
I don't him. Think anybody cares because they say, I offend people sometimes. My neighbor Joe offends people sometimes, and I really don't care because I'm a good man and he's a good man, and that's all that matters to them.
You know, we're
so
being...
The media chasing these rabbits is largely ineffective, I think, for his base.
We're being tested as to fatigue as a country.
I think that's a good point.
Because it goes on every day, and it's dismaying to some people that there's even the discussion. You know, social media, we didn't know what Facebook was 10 years mm-hmm. ago. And I've got hundreds of Facebook friends across the board. I'm proud
That's a little
to have
humble
friends.
Brag there. Do you hear? I've got
hundreds of Facebook friends.
Scott is very popular.
I'm not humble about this. No, I've got a lot of friends who are Republicans, Democrats, far right, far left. I've got one friend in San Antonio who just hits repost on everything from every wacky right-wing website. And
you're friends with my dad too, huh?
Yeah. You follow my mom
on Facebook, huh?
And we get into robust discussions. Last night we had one, and I had to be the referee, and I finally said, okay, you, I called him by name, I'm deleting the last multiple exchange because you delved into name-calling and profane name-calling, and I'm not going to have that here, and you get to go up to bed without dessert. You know, I'd like to keep it on a higher level. That said, it's evoking a lot of people going to their corner, you know, automatically, whatever is posted or whatever is said.
Well, that's confirmation bias, right? And
I've always felt quite comfortable in the gutter, so I don't mind it as much. But I see your point. It is an interesting world. I do think this, though. I think Trump is an outlier, clearly. Never been a president with his background. Never been a president has approached things the way he does. You have to think he's probably not the trendsetter. He's probably the outlier. I think what could hurt our country more than anything else, it's not so much their fault. I don't think they do it as a strategy. I just think it's the way these trends have manifested. I think that person in the middle that could have voted for Trump, next time could vote for Martin O'Malley or whoever else. I think that person...
Martin O'Malley.
Whoever the Democrat would be. Figure Democrat. George Clooney. Whoever it is. I do think that person, in their gut, thinks that the media hates Trump and the media is not as unbiased as they once were. And I don't know if they ever were, but I think the impression of that, and I think that is a very bad thing. If you look back in our previous times in our history, you had Hearst and Pulitzer. If Hearst liked a candidate, Pulitzer hated him. And the public got their information through a lens of that rivalry. It wasn't good information. I don't know that it's good. Presidents come and go. There's a term limit on how long he'll be here. I worry that if the media cannot separate themselves, when I watch CNN, that's my default channel I've watched for a long time. Hey, what's up? We have a cameo on the podcast here by Jeff City Council and David Kimmel. that's one of the benefits of doing this here live on the sidewalk. I think, though, when I watch Anderson Cooper, in my gut, I think he's a fair reporter. He's a very professional. I enjoy getting news from him. When he talks about Donald Trump, which is damn near every night now, you can tell he hates the man. And I honestly think he would be very tempted to put things in a negative light that affect Donald Trump where he would not other people. And I think that when you have that gut feeling, it will be bad for this country. And I think there's got to be a moderating posture. I don't know if it's going to take a national tragedy that the existing systems and a weak president pull through, but something has to correct that, because that'll be bad for our country.
Well, it's nice to have a president, any president, who has, and this is an overused term, moral authority to unite us in a moment of great crisis.
Yes.
I think of President Clinton's speech at Waco, which was a turning point for him around the time of the impeachment. I think of Ronald Reagan's magnificent speech after the Challenger disaster, when he really said what everybody was feeling. Bill Clinton was the cause, was the source of derision by a lot of people of "I feel your pain" and the empathy president. I think now we have a president who his obvious displays of empathy I have not been able to see. I'm not just saying it's because he's a billionaire and lives in a tower. I'm saying it's his background and his upbringing and who he is. And he was a fully evolved human being when we elected him. He's a 70-year-old, what now, almost 71, I guess, year-old man. He's not going to change. The odds of him changing in a substantial way are almost none.
I don't think he's changed from the man we elected.
Oh, no, and I think this was the fact before Election Day, and it remains the fact, except the qualities of him, of Trump, have come out and been magnified, I think, by the presidency. None of us sitting here can imagine what that job is like.
No.
Truman called the White House that great white tomb, the loneliest job in the world, and that's really true. And so how does he cope with it? Well, this guy tweets a lot in the morning, and he tweets when he's annoyed, and he's thin-skinned. If I had evidence behind the scenes that he was managing things and approaching everything in a mature and with an even keel and decisive, not knee-jerk reaction, that'd be one thing, but there is no evidence of that that we see. He is surrounded. Now, I think General Kelly, you know, his new chief of staff, has been trying to organize
making adjustments.
Yeah, and there is some of that you can see, but he's not taking his phone away from him. And that is giving us the glimpse of Donald Trump every morning. One other thing about President Trump. Let's say he completes his term. The question I've wondered is if the other presidents are going to tell him the combination lock to the clubhouse. You know, are they going to want to hang out with him? It's been interesting
to
me.
Do you really think he won't complete his term?
Oh, no. If he completes his term, I see.
I mean, why would you think he wouldn't?
Well, there could be any number of reasons he's not in office, and I'm not even going to go there. Because it could be the route of impeachment. He could resign. He may dig his heels in and
well, that's
he
the
be
same
president
as every
again.
Other president.
What is
do you think it's greater? Do you think it's greater
he...
with Trump, or do you think
well,
you're just saying that
we
as
don't
a...
know because there is so much we don't know.
Before
about,
Bill Clinton was impeached, did we say? Did we think that those same things about him? Right, because he ended up being
in,
about
in his
Bill
second
Clinton.
Term.
Right.
I will bet you a plate of Sharknado with a Vienna sausage kicker. You come back on the podcast, and Donald Trump will end his term either in 4 or 8 years, just like everyone else. I think the fact that he does things differently is not impeachable. I think the fact that he tweets is an impeachable offense. I think that I've seen nothing. His dealings with Congress have been a complete failure. He gets the blame. He would get the credit. He gets the blame. He has not been able to pass the things he promised the American people he would do. I think his international dealings, the one international issue he's had, I think he's handled very well in North Korea. And, you know, it's only been 6 months.
I think he could get fed up himself, pardon himself and everyone around him, and resign and go back and
pardon
keep, keep making money. We don't know yet, but keep in mind, when Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon, it was for any crimes he committed or may have committed from the day of his inauguration to his in 69 to 74. Now, can a president pardon himself? I ain't no lawyer, and I don't know.
What would
but
he pardon? I mean,
he could give himself a blanket pardon, presumably. Now, whether
that's part of the problem is people infer things like that, and they don't say, well, clearly the president has guilty of facilitating the Watergate break.
Oh, I'm I don't know.
There's
what
nothing
he,
to.
He's guilty right now of being a bore and crude and profane.
Well, he's not
but that
boring.
Is not
though.
Impeachable. No, B-O-O-R.
Yeah, but he's not boring.
This is some Butler County translation here, but he. Let's let it sit with Robert Mueller and the investigators. Let's see what they come up with. This is going to be decided at a different level than this table.
Thank God.
Thank God. And I do think he has... I don't know how long it's going to take to bring the presidency back to an office that we can respect. The office holder as well as the office.
The last question before we do our five question segment. What is a couple things the president could do from a media relations standpoint to improve his standing with the public? With the media? Not even to the public. What could he do to improve his standing with the media? Is there any way they would give him a fair shake? Anything he could do to entice him to give him a fair shake?
Well, reportedly, he's talking to reporters. Maggie Haberman from the New York Times, mm-hmm. who's so admired by so many people and probably reviled by others because she's the New York Times.
Sure.
She's covered him since he was Trump, the real estate guy in New York, and reportedly he'll pick up the phone and talk to her and call her.
Is that normal for presidents to do with reporters?
How would I know? I would never cover the White House, but...
Would governors pick up the phone and just chat with you when you covered the Capitol?
Occasionally. They would initiate the call, or I would, depending
on the
deadline.
Oh, we'll save that for five questions. So outside of just talking to some reporters off the record candidly and chatting with them, what is something else he could do to get a fair shake from the press?
He could tell the truth.
Okay.
He could tell the unvarnished truth. He could tell it in a way unlike the history of Jared Kushner, that was cooked up on Air Force One reportedly on his Moscow trip. It doesn't have to come out in stages and dribs and drabs. Come out and tell the whole truth about something. The American people, I think the people of Missouri, I'll speak more to them, I think the people of Missouri are resilient in some ways in that they can forgive people, they can forgive a lot. The one thing they don't like is hypocrisy.
Sure. I think when people talk about impeachment casually without any sort of crime to attach that to, I think that strikes me as unfair. When people say the president should be more honest, I think candidly he should be. I think that's a fair criticism. I think there's some of the things he says that aren't true.
I say stay tuned. We don't have charges that have arisen out of the Mueller investigation. Who knows how long that's going to go on? Which is another issue, by the way. If that goes on and on, I mean, is Trump going to try to fire Mueller if he's irritated by it? Here's the thing. Why is there all this cover-up going on and lying about Russia? Unless there's any smoke there. I don't get it.
Why would there be
that?
This many leaks from a federal prosecutor if he wasn't a little obsessed with having his name in print? Does he do anything that he doesn't call five reporters about? And I've dealt with prosecutors, and there's a lot of them I respect. Some of them I don't. The ones I probably respect the least are the ones that just absolutely headline.
Some of the leaks, by the way, are coming not from the prosecutors, as I understand it, but from people who have been called or interviewed by the prosecutors about what they are being asked about.
It shows that they have a low respect for Mueller.
Yeah, I think they're people. They're not under oath at that point. They can call a reporter and tell them, yeah, I got called in to the grand jury or whatever it might be, and this is what I said. Notice they're not putting their name on it.
So you think truthfulness and continuing to just do some conversations off the record?
Well, that would be a Band-Aid on a gash. I think Trump at this point, how can you trust anything the man says? He lies when the truth would be just as good. That's what my hillbilly grandfather
used to say. People said that about Bill
say.
Clinton, too. I mean,
Bill Clinton's gone, and he got impeached by the House, by the way.
And
it failed in the Senate. Well, Dale Bumpers, the late senator from Arkansas, said in his defense of Bill Clinton on the Senate floor, which was hailed as one of the great pieces of oratory, he said, when people tell you it's not about sex, it's about sex. And it's about the guy's relationship with his wife. You could go on a long time about the Bill and Hillary axis. I actually knew them back in Arkansas when he was governor, and I covered them for the AP. And we all knew then that she was the smarter partner and more disciplined partner of the two. that this was an outgrowth.
Isn't that every marriage, though? Right?
I believe it is.
It certainly is.
I believe it is.
Make that crystal clear for our listeners.
I believe that's
we need to do our five question segment. So every you're now on the hot seat, not just because you're right here on High Street. And there could be any of these folks getting off work and leaving happy hour, take a improper right. You're on the hot seat now because Becky always brings five questions that are usually a little off topic for politics.
But yeah, this is pretty off topic. So question one, best birthday you've ever had in your life?
Best birthday I ever had in my life? It's hard
and
to...
And you've only had, what, 30 of them, so
there's
not that
so
many to pull
much.
From.
Best birthday I ever had... there are actually two of them that are quite memorable. One of them was when I was a little boy. I lived in Little Rock, and my mom hired a local character called Cactus Vic. And he dressed in a cowboy outfit, and he drove around with a little carousel tied to the back of his station wagon. And he'd roll up, and everybody would get on and ride his carousel, and that was memorable. So I remember that even now, because he handed out Tootsie Pops, and it was just a great, innocent time. No thought of politics, no thought of government, Donald Trump, or anything else. In adulthood, my best birthday was a few years ago when a surprise family reunion was planned. I had family come from out of town, and what is better than being with family and having them surround you in a backyard,
on your birthday,
on
right?
a backyard,
it's all about you.
On my
I'm
birthday.
Into that.
Well, but it was all about the family, really, because with my family, believe me, if I could get a word in, it would be great. But we're a talking bunch, and we reminisce so well, and that's the kind of thing that can tie people together. I have a brother who is a Donald Trump supporter through and through. I have another brother who's much more liberal than I am. And we ended up not talking politics because we wanted to talk about mutual memories and things that we shared. So family's a great unifying thing. That was an awesome birthday.
That's awesome. Okay, so going off of Scott's question earlier, best governor to work with as a member of the press?
Member of the press.
Matt Blunt.
Well, I actually was off the Capitol beat soon after Blunt got in office, and so I can't really speak to him, but I know there were a lot of sunshine law issues, let us say. The Mel Carnahan people, Chris Sifford was his press secretary, and Chris had been a news reporter, radio and newspaper, and Chris was
Southeast
the kind...
Missouri.
Yeah, Chris was the kind who would drop by the office when nothing was going on. And say, what's in the news today? And
we'd
talk about the news. Yeah, where it was an unguarded moment. And or he would be playing basketball with the state troopers at the Methodist Church, and he'd drop by during night hearings still in his T-shirt and say, hey, what are they talking about down there? So you get a rapport with people like that. Mel Carnahan was much more open in this sense to be seen as a failure potentially, and I'll give you a specific example. In 1993, his first session as governor, one of his large bills was Senate Bill 380, which was taxes increase and education changes, and it was hailed as one of his great accomplishments. But he was there on the House floor on the final vote on the side gallery watching it. And it was not a sure thing. It was controversial. But he stood there, and what a risk that is from a PR standpoint. Mm-hmm. He could have been standing on the side gallery of the chamber, controlled by his fellow Democrats. What an embarrassment that would have been for a freshman governor. He pulled it out. They got the votes. It passed. And we all turned and got a comment from him. And then he went on his way. He didn't run. He went on his way. So I thought that was an example of someone with the sausage-making process in front of your eyes standing there as a witness with all of us. He may have had a roll call vote in his pocket. He may have known what was going to happen. But I thought that was an interesting example of someone who was exposing a flank. So I'd say the Mel Carnahan folks, Chris Sifford specifically, was very good at getting back with the press. There were a few times that the news was not good. There was an incident where a state trooper pushed a reporter at the airport who was trying to ambush the governor with a microphone, and the governor came out and later apologized for that. He said that shouldn't have happened, but it came up all of a sudden. This is pre-9/11 and all that, when the security wasn't as extensive as it is now. So I would say the Carnahan administration was more open. Other governors have not been quite as open to the press or much more guarded. But the access has changed over the years. It has tightened up a lot for Democrats and Republicans. course, Roger Wilson was only governor for 3 months, but you could always get a quote from Roger Wilson. He was eminently quotable.
Question 3. Your favorite cigar?
My favorite cigar.
Favorite cigar.
I think
the one that you gave to Scott right now, right?
It's, well, this is a very good.
You gave Scott your least favorite cigar. Yeah.
No, this is a very good cigar. Although Mark Twain would often say that he was a great cigar smoker, and everybody always wanted a cigar from Mark Twain as a souvenir. And he was always getting cigars as gifts, and when they were really awful cigars, he'd fill his humidor with them. He'd open it and say, "Get one, please do." It was not his best cigar. I love the Arturo Fuente Double Chateau Fuente Natural Wrapper. It's wrapped with a little bit of cedar that gives it a little bit of extra sweetness and humidity that helps its texture and makes it much more enjoyable when you're lying in a hammock and thinking about the great issues.
So now we know what to get Scott for his birthday, right? Our listeners know what to get him.
Two.
Yes, exactly.
Do you recommend enjoying that with a plate of Sharknado while watching Sharknado?
I can't think of anything more pleasant than all of that, plus sitting here with you all 3 feet from the actual gutter on High Street.
As a metaphor.
As a metaphor.
As a metaphor. Okay, question 4. If you could live anywhere else in the country besides Missouri, where do you live?
Missouri.
Missouri for me. I'm a St. Louis girl. I live in Columbia.
Well, if I couldn't live in Missouri, I'd want to live in Missouri.
You stole my answer. I can't think of any place better than Missouri, and I'll tell you why. We have so much here. We could go different places. If I had to pick someplace, a general sort of rule would be lower humidity would be nice, and 4 distinct seasons would be nice, which we do have here. I've lived in Baton Rouge, I've lived in Little Rock, and it was more tropical in both of those places. So I'm not a warm weather guy. I wouldn't flee to Florida, but I've often wanted to see Maine, and I think the coast of Maine would be nice with some whales and lobsters, especially on my plate.
Cigar.
Where would you live, Peggy?
Ooh, I think I love Denver, and I love Miami, Florida. I love Washington, D.C. I think I would live in D.C. I could live in D.C.
I think if I was going to live somewhere...
As a political nerd, you go to D.C. and you have to love it. You love it. And especially everybody's
like them East Coast
young
people.
And hungry, and I'm really into
I ain't met a lot of East Coast people I'd like.
He doesn't even like the East Coast of the Mississippi.
Yeah. Right. So,
if I was going to live somewhere besides West Butler County... I think I would probably live in East Butler County over there by Todd somewhere. I mean, they're flat, but they have some nice places.
And what a move that would be the day Scott Vaughn moves from West Butler County to East Butler County. That's a new
whole
day.
Different culture.
That's a new earthquake.
Yeah.
Right, that's a new earthquake. Okay, last question, 5 questions. What is the most memorable story or reporting you've ever been a part of?
Ooh, that's a good question.
There are 2 stories in my career as an Associated Press reporter that were indelible because they were not just spot stories that you hit and run, but stories in which you were immersed. The foremost, it's like 1A and 1B, the foremost was the Great Flood of 1993. And I know I'm dating myself and I'm here with 2 extremely young individuals, but that...
Best guest ever. Best guest ever.
That was a terrible ordeal for Missouri. Even in Jefferson City, we're sitting here on a beautiful sunny day in August on High Street, but the flood of 93 came in June, July, August. The waters didn't really recede a lot of places till August. It was ongoing misery. And even in Jefferson City, the floodwaters that came up through Weirs Creek and isolated the downtown, that you could, it put Highway 50 underwater. The bridge was closed. If you wanted to go across the bridge, you had to go to Washington, Missouri, or you had to go to Boonville on a very crowded Highway 5. And if you were lucky enough to be an essential state worker or official, you might catch a helicopter across to Jeff from the Jeff City Airport, which was also underwater, so they took it to Columbia. So that was a huge story with a lot of misery. And I was out there every day as an AP reporter, not in Jeff City. I was in eastern Missouri along the river, and seeing the misery and yet the resilience and the goodness of Missourians every day, it was quite a mixed thing to see. Very emotional for me to even think about. The other story that really shook Missouri in my time was the plane crash that killed Governor Carney. And that was on the night of October 16th, 2000, a couple of 3 weeks before the U.S. Senate election. It literally plunged the state into shock. because nobody expected that. I felt bad for John Ashcroft at the time because there is no playbook for a campaign like that. And as he tried to edge back into the campaign against an opponent he didn't know, I mean, Mel Carnahan was still on the ballot. And that was an ordeal for Missouri. I covered three funerals in the span of about 4 days all over the state. And it was a tough assignment because many of us knew the individuals involved. Chris Sippert, I mentioned. Randy Carnahan, the governor's son, who was the pilot, and Governor Carnahan. I think Missouri was fortunate at that time to have Roger Wilson as lieutenant governor, who was leaving the scene. He hadn't run for re-election, wasn't running for anything. So he was able to step up. And his personality was such that he had empathy for the people and helped them through that. And I think he was the right man.
I think he's one of the most talented people to never be elected governor. Talented politicians I ever heard of.
I do. He was always talked about as for someone for higher office. He got to lieutenant governor. He was there for two terms. He was really a man of the Senate because he'd served in the Senate for so many years. And so as lieutenant governor, you know, he was right where he needed to be. He loved it. Even though he disagreed with Governor Carnahan on some key issues like Second Amendment issues, he was not nearly so far anti-gun as Mel Carnahan.
There's a lot of Missouri in Roger Wilson.
Yeah. Former Representative Ted Farnan from Audrain County had a great line one time that he was complimenting one of his Democratic friends from rural Missouri, and he said, "You're the Roger Wilson of the Boot Heel." Well, to be called the Roger Wilson of something
meant
to be one who was attuned to the people and was in sync. So I would say those were the two stories. The Carnahan plane crash, which was a big national story. It came, as you probably remember, on the eve of one of the presidential debates of Bush and Gore in St. Louis. So we had a lot of national media here anyway to cover that. And it got on the national radar. It changed American history. John Ashcroft became Attorney General and was AG at a pivotal time. And I've always admired Ashcroft in his hospital bed, pointing to Comey and saying, "That's the deputy, that's the acting AG, don't come to me dying on my hospital bed to ask me to do certain things," when they were trying to push through some of the things Ashcroft considered, if not questionable. He said, "I am not able, this is the guy making the decision." I always admired him for his character on that. So those were the two big stories. The Great Flood of 93.
Salsa dancing hour here in Jeff City. Well, Scott Chardon, former Associated Press reporter. Scott Chardon Communications, is that right?
That's right. Chardon Communications and Consulting. I do. I took an early retirement from AP in 2005. AP had, after the 2001 legislative session, created a new job for me of roving reporter in Missouri, and I spent 4 years just going all over the state writing about everything, and I loved that job, but the allure of getting that call at 3 a.m. to go out to a tornado scene across the state, that loses its luster when you're in your 40s.
I can see that.
A little creaky. So I took what was called a sabbatical from the AP, and that's to put that in West Butler County ease, that's a $5 word for an unpaid vacation. Some time off, and I was approached by Elson Floyd, who was then president of the university, about coming on board with him and advising him on a consulting basis about what the people of Missouri thought. And the AP actually approved that, even though I was not on their payroll. And I did that for about 6 months as sort of a listening tour, which I think is something the university is doing more of now. And I liked working with him so much, he invited me to join his staff. And so I took an early retirement from AP, worked there. I worked at the university 3 years to the day for three presidents, and which shows the leadership sort of churn that goes on at that level. And then after that, I started my own company, and I do media consulting with individuals. I do nonpartisan ballot issues. I don't do paid work for candidates, and people ask me why, and it's because I've never had a ballot issue that got in trouble with the law, that had an embarrassing story on the front page to explain to his wife or his daughter or his grandma. And I like working on ballot issues and ballot measure campaigns.
Well, I think you've said it all. Thank you so much for joining us. Very much appreciated.
Glad to be here on a beautiful day.
Peggy, you'll have your more professional co-host back next week with Rachel.
Thank goodness.
I'm glad
you said it so I didn't have
Everyone was thinking
you're
it.
You're self-aware if nothing else.
But. She's finishing up the magazine that'll have the legislative boards in it by the time you hear this podcast. That should be nearing a newsstand near you in the Capitol. And we look forward to seeing everybody at Veto Session next week. Until then, I want to thank the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce for sponsoring the show. And we will see you at the Capitol for what I think will be probably an unproductive but eventful day of Veto Session.